This is Charlottesville Tomorrow, an advocate for our future today. Charlottesville Tomorrow is a nonpartisan community organization working on land use, transportation, and community design issues. Visit us on the web at seavilletomorrow.org.
On March 6, 2007, the Free Enterprise Forum hosted a luncheon at the Omni Hotel in Charlottesville, Virginia. Jim Bacon was invited to discuss the political realities of transportation policy, as well as the links between economic opportunity and mobility in Virginia. Mr. Bacon is the publisher of the online newsletter Bacon's Rebellion, which he launched in 2002. Prior to that, he was the publisher and editor-in-chief of Virginia Business Magazine. Mr. Bacon, who lives in Richmond, is among the most prominent and well-respected of the new media writers, providing insights on Virginia public policy issues and the Virginia General Assembly. This luncheon, recorded by Charlottesville Tomorrow, begins with introductions by Neil Williamson, Executive Director of the Free Enterprise Forum.
Good afternoon. I want to thank you again for coming to the Economic Opportunity Luncheon. This is the first in a series that the Free Enterprise Forum is going to be putting on this year. Our next speaker will be involved in transportation as well, but a little more with land use. And you'll be hearing more on our website as well as through our newsletter, Forum Watch. As a background, as most of you know, the Free Enterprise Forum is a privately funded think tank, for lack of a better term, focused on local government. We're thrilled to be able to host this event today and happy to have Jim Bacon with us. Today's event has been underwritten by the Associated General Contractors of Virginia, Piedmont Division. I want to thank both Chris Lee, this year's president of the State Association, as well as Marcia Baxter, the division chief, for making this event a reality. Thank you very much. I'd also like to thank my Free Enterprise Forum colleagues, Natasha Sinitsky and Julie Ehrlich, because I couldn't do this without their help. Thank you very much. Why is the Free Enterprise Forum looking at transportation policy? Based on our research, we believe that there is a clear causal link between economic opportunity and mobility. We will continue to explore that link in this series throughout the year. Today, we're looking at the state of Virginia and the political realities of transportation policy. At about this time each year in the legislative calendar, I have the same feeling about Virginia's transportation plans as my kids on our vacation. Are we there yet? Today's speaker, Jim Bacon, is no stranger to Charlottesville. He worked here for a number of years and continues to be a regular contributor to WINA's Charlottesville Right Now radio program. His newsletter, Bacon's Rebellion, is considered required reading in Richmond and beyond, as he provides a forum for opinion leaders from all over the political spectrum to voice and, most importantly, defend their positions. Today, Jim is here to discuss the current state of transportation compromise in Richmond, how we got here, and if, as a state, we need to trade in our somewhat unreliable legislative process for a new mechanism to better determine transportation policies and funding. Please welcome Jim Bacon.
Thanks, Neil. I'm really delighted here, and in fact, to be here, and I'm even more delighted to know that there is such a thing as a free enterprise forum in Charlottesville. I always thought of Charlottesville as kind of a bastion of a blue state politics. So I'm really glad, reassured to know that there are people who support the concepts of fiscal conservatism and free markets. So congratulations for everything that you're doing. Some of you all might have heard this old joke, but start out with it. You know the derivation of the word politics? It comes from the Greek word poly, meaning many, and ticks, meaning small blood-sucking insects. And that's a pretty good description of what we have going on in the legislative process when it comes to transportation. Everybody wants better roads, but no one wants to pay for them themselves. Rather, everybody wants someone else to pay for them. As the classic French economist Frederick Bastiat said long ago, the state is the entity by which everyone seeks to live at the expense of everyone else. And if you read the news accounts, the issue is very simple. Roads are getting congested, and the solution is to build more roads. Or if you're particularly enlightened, maybe throw in a little transit or heavy rail. The idea is you're running low on money, therefore we must raise taxes. I just don't buy that. The transportation crisis is a classic case of powerful groups dressing up their self-interest in the guise of the public good. I call this coalition the axis of taxes. The contractors, the engineers, the bankers, the speculators, the developers, all those who would profit from an expansion of road funding. These guys would make out very handsomely, but the taxpayers, not to mention the public good, would not. Here's my argument. Our transportation system, however suitable it may have been for Virginia in the 30s and 40s and 50s, is today outmoded and broken. Dumping more money into a broken system is pouring money onto sand. In the absence of fundamental reform, traffic congestion will just get worse, no matter how much money you throw at it. According to VDOT's own numbers, it would cost an extra $5.4 billion a year over the next 20 years to build our way out of traffic congestion, assuming that it's even possible to build your way out, which some people don't think is possible. The plans that the governor and the General Assembly are batting about would raise only somewhere between $1 billion to $1.5 billion a year, basically a third or a fourth of what we need to be able to build our way out. So basically, from the start, using the assumptions of the traffic engineers, if you think that building more roads is the way to solve traffic congestion, this approach is doomed to failure. So I can promise you, if these taxes are passed, all the politicians will be back in several years saying that, A, it's not working, we need more money. So we need fundamental reform if we're going to have any hope of dealing with these problems. So what kind? Well, let me just kind of briefly enumerate them and then kind of go into a little bit more detail. First, we need to fix the scattered, disconnected, low-density pattern of development commonly referred to as suburban sprawl. Second, we need to make the system work more efficiently by reforming VDOT and local mass transit monopolies. And thirdly, we need to devise a system for financing transportation improvements based upon the fundamental principle of user pays, that those who use the system or benefit from the system pay for it in direct proportion to which they use it. Now, the transportation packages under discussion in the Capitol right now won't do much of this. Governor Kaine has a few good ideas, but they just tinker on the margins. The General Assembly plan that's been passed has some good ideas too, but they also are incomplete. They just don't get the job done. Now, let me explain why. Let me submit to you the following proposition. Getting back to the first thing I mentioned, land use reform. This is the proposition. Some patterns of development are more transportation efficient than other patterns of development. Put another way, some patterns of development generate more car trips and longer car trips, and some patterns of development generate fewer and shorter car trips, putting less strain on transportation infrastructure. The average licensed Virginia motorist drives about $17,000 a year. That compares to about 10,000 miles a year about 25 years ago, back during the energy crisis. So in just one generation, the average Virginian has come to drive 70% more than she did 25 years ago. That's not just taking population growth into account. That's saying population growth plus individuals driving more. So why is that? Why are we driving so much more? Well, the first reason, this is the good reason, is prosperity. more people can afford to buy cars and drive them and go when they please and where they please. That's not a bad thing. We all welcome and embrace that kind of mobility. But the other problem is changing human settlement patterns, the spread of suburban sprawl. There are several key features of sprawl that contribute to the increase in driving. Let me kind of run down the list of these. First, segregated land uses. The spatial separation of housing from offices, from stores, from schools, churches, and other public amenities. Because the land uses are separated, they cannot be accessed on foot. You have to drive from one location to another. You have no choice. The second piece is low-density zoning. So not only are land uses separated, but the units within the land uses are separated and pushed farther apart. That means you need longer lengths of road to connect them, and people must drive longer distances. Now, low-density zoning has another pernicious effect. It makes mass transit more uneconomical. As a rule of thumb in the planning business, people are willing to walk about a quarter mile to reach a bus, or a little longer maybe to access a rail line. Low-density development reduces the number of people who can conveniently access that mass transit. Fewer customers means lower revenues, which makes mass transit uneconomical. In many parts of Virginia, or indeed most parts of Virginia now, walking in mass transit, once a predominant means of getting around, simply are not even options. The only way to get around is to drive a car. A third feature of our planning system is what I call the pod form of development. It's the building of subdivisions and shopping centers and office parks that are hermetically sealed off from one another, often with physical barriers. So they don't connect with their neighbors except by means of collector roads and arterials. And, of course, those collector roads and arterials are prone to blockage and congestion. There is no lack of roadway in Virginia. The problem is that the roads we have are poorly distributed. Half the lane miles of road in Virginia sit virtually unused all day in cul-de-sac subdivisions, while all the traffic crowds onto a handful of overloaded collectors and arterials. You'll notice that you don't have the same problem in cities with grid street patterns. Grid streets offer alternative routes. They don't bottleneck as badly. I won't say it's always easy or smooth getting around in cities, but you don't have a lot of the same kind of bottlenecks you have in many suburbs, despite the fact the cities are dense and congested. It's kind of an irony. Some of the worst congestion we have is in the low-density or middle-density suburbs. The fourth thing the problem that's created by our planners in our planning system is auto-centric design. County traffic planners or engineers are concerned with one thing, that's moving cars. You all have a classic example of that. Just go to 29 North and ask yourself, would you ever walk across the street? No. To cross the street, you'd hop in your car. I mean, that is pretty sad. So we have reached the height of absurdity in Virginia when, to use an example from my home, the Richmond area, developers can build projects like Stony Point and Short Pump shopping centers as pedestrian malls, where the only walking is inside the mall. The actual malls are surrounded by acres and acres of parking lots. No one actually walks to the malls. So anyway, the common denominator of all these things, the mess is not the result of free market forces. It is a result of government regulation. We have gotten largely what we have planned for. And the way to solve the problem is giving government less power, not more. Give developers more freedom to build new communities and redevelop old ones along the lines that meet market demand. Now, sometimes market demand will ask for more traditional cul-de-sac neighborhoods, and that's fine. But in many instances, the market craves more compact, mixed-use communities with pedestrian-friendly design. In many instances, the market wants transit-oriented development that would position the development to take advantage of mass transit, buses, and trains. We need to allow developers more latitude and more freeway to build those kind of communities instead of what we have right now. Everywhere they try to do it, they run into resistance from their neighbors. So that's the first thing we need to think about, is reforming land use. And if we can do that, if we can kind of address those fundamental problems, we'll take huge steps forward. So what are lawmakers proposing right now? Governor Kaine wants to give he wants to give local governments more power to say no to developers if their projects, in the case the projects overwhelm local transportation infrastructure. That sounds good, and it might fix the problem locally, right in the vicinity of the project. But there are repercussions. The fact is, people have to live somewhere. If they can't live in one place, they'll live in another. They'll move somewhere else, typically farther away from the metropolitan job centers. What happens? They end up driving farther, and they contribute to congestion along more road miles of roadway. The Republicans, I think, at least glimpsed the problem, and their package would require fast growth counties to create urban development areas where they could concentrate their investment in roads and water and sewer and other infrastructure. And Clay Athey, the author of this legislation, expects to see more new urbanism-style development with mixed uses, higher densities, and pedestrian-friendly design. I mean, that was just like an intellectual breakthrough of the first order of magnitude, the fact that you would have a Republican delegate actually talk about new urbanism. I found that actually extraordinary. So that there are signs that that the mentality is changing. But the trouble is that would apply to the fast-growth counties only. A more comprehensive solution would encourage redevelopment of inner cities in decaying older suburbs where infrastructure already exists. Okay, so that's the land use piece. We talked about that, and what we've got planned is, like, it's a step forward, it's in the right direction, but it's not nearly enough. The next thing we need to do is improve the efficiency of the transportation system we already have. Let's just take what we've got and make it work better. There are a number of ideas out there for that. And one is performance rating. Now, this is actually an idea that is contained in the GOP compromise bill and seems to be backed by Governor Kaine. So it's an area where people actually seem to agree. And that is rank road projects on the extent to which they improve safety or mitigate congestion. I'm not absolutely certain, but I think the idea is to basically kind of do return on investment analysis of these projects. Believe it or not, we don't do that now. I mean, you think it would be kind of fundamental. If we build project X or project Y, what kind of traffic congestion mitigation do we get, bang per buck, do we get for a dollar here versus what's the bang for the buck for the dollar here? We just don't do that. And there's a recent report out of Great Britain, the Eddington Report, and what they did was very interesting. They surveyed several hundred road improvements in the UK, and they actually did a return on investment ranking. And what they found was that the big, highly visible billion-dollar or billion-pound projects that the politicians like because it generates lots of headlines and photos and you know, gets the name roads after them, stuff like that, the big projects generate significantly lower returns than many of the smaller projects. Now, not all small projects generate high returns. There's much more variability. But the fact is, if you have finite number of dollars, why not invest in where you get the highest return, the greatest bang for your buck? So if Virginia did that, I think we'd see a lot more pinpick projects that alleviate local bottlenecks and have a lot greater impact on congestion. The next operational improvement falls under the domain of intelligent transportation systems. Basically, we're talking about substituting information technology for asphalt. We're talking about putting monitors on roads and connecting them to traffic control centers. The single greatest thing you can do to improve traffic congestion in Virginia is to quickly spot traffic accidents and then get them cleared off the road. That means you need good information. That should be your number one priority. A little more futuristically, if Virginia tied traffic monitors to traffic lights, it would theoretically be possible to kind of dynamically synchronize the lights in response to changing traffic conditions. And that would be a great way to squeeze more capacity, particularly out of urban roads where it's too expensive to acquire more right-of-way. There are some very simple operational improvements that people talk about. One is controlling the entrance onto on-ramps. Let cars on at a kind of slower, more regular rate so they don't bunch up when they merge. You can actually increase the capacity and reduce the congestion on the interstates when you do that. Another idea is to limit direct commercial access to the arterial roads, so every property owner that abuts U.S. 29 North doesn't have access to 29 North. If you might have to kind of like do a little more circumvented way to get to the main road, but the people who are on the road can move a lot more smoothly that way. And that's something that the Kane administration is actually moving forward with, so that's encouraging. Finally is telecommuting. The economy is going through a seismic shift in the relationship between workers and the workplace. Virtually everyone can have access to a cell phone, a wireless laptop, and a virtual private network today. Almost anyone can work from anywhere, at least in the service sector. An increasing number do. People who work from home aren't clogging the commuter lanes. Why doesn't the state do more to encourage more telework among its own workforce? Why doesn't the state use the bully pulpit to get the private sector to do more? The last of the operational improvements is mass transit. Basically, government monopolies, local government transit monopolies, crowd out shared vehicle systems in the private sector. You got your transit monopolies and you got your taxi cabs. And it's very controlled, it's very regulated, there's very little competition, and there's virtually no innovation at all in this sector. Why don't we have more van pools in Virginia? Why don't we have more jitneys? Why don't we have more taxi cabs? Go to a third world country, go to any third world country where the governments don't have traffic monopolies, and you'll find the private sector does a pretty darn good job of moving poor people around, even though they're poor and don't have that much money. What we need to do is restructure the whole way we approach shared ridership and turn loose the creative juices of private entrepreneurs in Virginia. And unfortunately, no one is even talking about that. That's not on the agenda at all. Okay, so we cover land use, we cover operational improvements. The next critical task, perhaps the most important, is to devise an economically rational transportation funding system. What we have now is bad, and what the GOP compromise package and Governor Kane's alternative to it would just make the system that's bad now even worse. So let me submit to you another proposition. This is fundamental. This is axiomatic. If we're going to solve traffic congestion in Virginia, there must be a rational and transparent nexus between those who use and benefit from the transportation system and those who pay for it. To the greatest extent possible, we need to move to a user pay system. Roads are like any other product or service that you underprice. You'll get shortages. Shortages in the instance of roads shows up in the form of traffic congestion. So the fundamental problem with our transportation system is a lack of pricing. It's all free. It's all given away, except where you have occasional instances where you have tolls. So there's no price allocation of scarce capacity. Now, Virginia has a quasi-user fee today. It's called the gas tax. The more you drive, the more you pay. It's not bad. But there are two problems. First, the gas tax is living on borrowed time. As people shift increasingly to hybrid cars, next generation, they'll shift to fuel cell cars and electric cars, and this is all going to happen over the next 20 years, gas revenues will evaporate. So how would Virginia lawmakers go about raising more money? Well, they would tax everything but gasoline. They want to tax car registrations, insurance premiums, automobile sales, and taxes on hotels, accommodations. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Everything in the world they would tax that has nothing to do with transportation. They'd also tap, the Republicans at least, would spend general fund revenues that come from income tax and sales tax. So the bottom line is all these tax schemes, to a greater or lesser degree, would subsidize those motorists who drive, say, 30,000 miles a year. Basically, they would subsidize the people who are part of the problem and would punish those who walk or ride bicycles or carpool or take the bus or work at home, the people who are part of the solution. Now, when you tax the people who are part of the solution and subsidize people who are part of the problem, you're not going to solve the problem. This is so easy to understand. I don't see why no one in the General Assembly seems to get it. And there may be one exception, and it happens to be sitting over here. But hardly anybody else seems to understand this. So, okay, how would I fund the transportation system? I'll call it the Bacon Plan. I can call it that because absolutely nobody else advocates this and probably isn't likely to in a long time, but I think it makes sense. The first component of a rational system would consist of a mileage fee. Technologies exist today that can ascertain how many miles you travel each month or certainly each year. And it can adjust for the weight of your vehicle and the idea that the bigger and heavier your car, the more pounding you put on the pavement and the more you contribute to the need for maintenance. And it can bill you accordingly. So it's very much of a direct form of user pays. And the idea is this tax should be totally transparent, not hidden in 20 different taxes that nobody sees or understands, totally transparent so everybody can see how much their driving costs them. And the other thing that should do is the annual tax should change every year. Nobody seems to want to change it. I think we ought to change the road maintenance tax every year. It should fluctuate up or down depending upon what it costs VDOT to maintain the roads. Why? Because that would put pressure on VDOT to devise more cost-efficient ways of maintaining roads. Whether you outsource or whether you implement your own more sophisticated asset management program, inducing life cycle analysis, whatever, VDOT could be doing a lot better job than it is right now. And having and charging people, taxpayers, what it costs them to drive the roads, and have that rate adjust every year, and have headlines generated around it, that would put a lot of pressure on VDOT that isn't there now. So that pays for the maintenance. Now, how do we pay for new roads? Well, first, the next platform is public-private partnerships. Now, that's an area where Virginia is actually doing a pretty good job already. The Kane administration, the Water administration before, has gone out pretty aggressively and solicited public-private partnerships to construct new major new road projects that will be funded by tolls. I think we could do more. But at least we're in the right direction. One way we could do more is not through tolls per se, but we could raise money through public-private partnerships by setting up community development authorities. A community development authority would be an instance where you have a bunch of landowners. They say, oh, we want to build a bunch of stuff, and we want to get better transportation connections to it. And if those transportation connections will increase the value of our property, what we'll be willing to do is we'll be willing to issue bonds to the CDA and pay for those bonds through higher taxes on our real estate. And these mechanisms exist. They've been put into place in different places around Virginia. It's just that it's not part of anything systematically. It's usually initiated by the developers. But it's the beauty of CDAs is they're win-win. I mean, if you do this right, it's like no one goes in there unless everybody, it's voluntary, everybody agrees. We all agree, yeah, we're all going to benefit, and we don't mind paying paying these taxes. And because the road improvements are going to make us richer. That's beautiful. I mean, why aren't we doing this more systematically? Okay, the next element is congestion pricing. With congestion pricing, you put a toll on a congested interstate or arterial road or put a cordon around an area like maybe Tyson's Corner, and you vary the charge for entering that road according to the time of day. congestion charges would be highest during, say, rush hour, and they might be kind of medium in the middle of the day and during the evening, and then it would be non-existent when traffic is light and flowing smoothly. And congestion charges do three things. I mean, this is like the coolest thing in the world. I can't believe we're not talking more about congestion charges. First of all, congestion charges actually increase road capacity, and they do that by reducing the flow of traffic to the optimal design level of the road in question. You get too much traffic on a road, you actually lose the road capacity, carrying capacity diminishes. So what you would do is you would set the rate to the optimum level. So the first thing you do right off the bat is you increase the capacity of the road network. The second thing you do is you give motorists a financial incentive to seek alternatives, an incentive to ride in carpools or ride in buses or vans or telecommute or shift their work schedules to off-peak hours or take alternate routes to their destination. It's real supply and demand at work. But the idea is you reduce the demand and get people to pursue alternatives. And the third thing that the congestion tolls do is they would raise revenue that could be plowed back into congestion mitigation improvements. These improvements could be anything that would increase the capacity of the corridor. It could be spot road improvements. They could be building bus stations or setting up BRT, service or synchronizing stoplights, whatever. Whatever is the most cost-effective thing, you would now have a funding source to finance it. Now, the key to making congestion charges work politically is to promise motorists that their money won't be diverted to some politician's pet project, that it will be actually diverted into improving mobility within that transportation corridor. You've got to promise that. And unfortunately, right now, no one really believes anything the politicians told them. Up in Northern Virginia, they finished paying off the Dulles Toll Road, and everybody was going, whoopee, no more toll. And then they decided, we changed our mind. We're going to use that to help pay for the metro extension up there. And so a lot of people felt, oh, okay, once you slap on a toll, for whatever reason, the politicians will never take it off. So something has got to be done to give assurances to taxpayers and toll payers. But anyway, you look at all these different alternatives, everything from land use reforms and operational improvements and congestion tolls and all the rest of it, and it is possible to improve the efficiency of the system and to pump more money into the transportation system. But we can do it in a way that rewards the virtuous and punishes the profligate. And as I say, it's too bad none of these approaches are being seriously considered in the General Assembly. But they are elsewhere in the world. It's truly amazing when a quasi-socialist country like France has privatized all of its major highways. And a country governed by the Labour Party like Great Britain, the Labour Party, the Socialist Party, okay, is talking about instituting congestion pricing nationally in Great Britain. At the same time, the politicians of Virginia, who give lip service to free enterprise and capitalism, cling to state socialism when it comes to roads. I think we can do better, and we must do better for our future. If we fail, we'll end up with the worst of both worlds. We'll end up with lousy roads and higher taxes. Thank you. All right, I don't know. Oh, I talked too long.
You've got just a couple of minutes for questions. If you've got a question for Jim, just speak up.
Yes.
What about privatizing existing roads as they did in Indiana when they privatized their state highway?
I think that's an option that ought to be considered. There are drawbacks of privatizing existing roads. You have to make sure you have a really good mechanism to make sure that the new buyer and owner of the roads doesn't just jack up tolls willy-nilly. There's got to be some sort of system for making sure that people who used to be able to ride the road for free aren't getting totally hosed. But I think that's an option. But the other thing about privatizing roads is if they aren't, the new owner may or may not be incentivized to set up congestion tolls. And I think it may be, and I haven't really thought this through, but I think if you want to have congestion tolls that maximize and optimize the throughput of the roads, it may be best to have a government entity that does that. I don't know. I mean, Speaker Howe has talked about privatizing roads, and they've done it in other states, and you get all this money, and then all of a sudden that creates a pot of money where you can go, oh, now we got to sell that road, so now we got a billion, well, the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel is something they talked about privatizing. That's a $1 billion pot of money to do whatever you want with. Well, then that kind of creates a problem, too, is how disciplined is the spending of that pot of money going to be? Is that money, you know, you'd privatize and you get all this stuff, and it's like, well, who's going to allocate the distribution of this? It won't be a road funding formula. It'll be, you know, maybe it'll be whatever project Speaker Howell wants it to go to. I mean, who knows? So there's political problems with that, too. It's an